This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie shows how the Mahasiddhas of ancient India were ordinary people who attained the highest levels of realization in the midst of everyday life. Their example, he says, reminds us that spiritual transformation can only occur within the exact circumstances of our specific life. This talk is from Buddhist Tantra, an audio course produced by Sounds True.
The great Indian Buddhist scholar Naropa lived in the 11th century. This was a person who was a very great scholar and monastic official and had risen through the ranks, had proved himself through his scholarship, and had finally become an abbot of the most important world-renowned monastery in North India named Nalanda. People came from all over the Buddhist world to study there. He's a good example because here's a person, really, who was at the top of the heap. He was at the top of the food chain, as we would say in Indian terms, in the sense of his accomplishments and his esteem in which he was held by his society and so on. And one day he was sitting reading his texts. He was just basically doing his thing and being successful and being this important grand person. And suddenly a shadow fell over him. And it was not a normal shadow. It wasn't as if the clouds had covered the sun. There was a strange, eerie feeling about it. Suddenly the landscape became dark. It was almost as if he was going to faint. And something changed, and he suddenly felt a cold wind, as if a door had opened into another world. And he turned around, and he saw a woman looking at him very intently. But this was not an ordinary woman. This was not a human woman, and it wasn't even a vision of anything that he had ever imagined, even in his wildest dreams. This was a woman who had a feeling of tremendous emptiness and openness, a kind of terrifying space shone out of her eyes. And Naropa felt that he was losing his sanity. He was about to fall into an endless abyss. Naropa's conventional world had come to an end, and who knows why? Maybe something to do with his particular maturation process, his karma, who knows. But in that moment, Naropa's life, as he had known it, was over. He had no more future. This happens to us sometimes. We're going along, and as far as the world's concerned, we're doing just great. Everything's going just fine. And then all of a sudden, one day, a door opens and a cold wind comes through and a shadow falls on us. And the life that we once lived is over. And we don't know where we are and we don't know what we're going to do, but we know we can't go back. That's what happened to Naropa. So this woman engaged him in conversation. The interesting thing about the other world, the world outside our little tiny human conventional world, is that it's very compassionate, and it's always willing to speak in a human voice. So this woman engaged him. Now, mind you, she was 6 or 7 feet off the ground, and even when she started talking, Naropa was not in any way thinking that anything had returned to normal. But he was interested because he looked around, and Nalanda University had disappeared. And North India had disappeared. And in fact, the day and the night had disappeared. Naropa was lost in space at this moment of incredible transformation for him. And so he looked at her, and she said to him, "You're a great scholar, aren't you? Do you understand the words and the logic of what you read?" And Naropa momentarily felt that he had found a reference point, and he said, "Yes, I do. That's my job. I'm good at that." And she was very happy, and she laughed and danced. This woman, up until this moment, had been a terrifying specter because she was a very, very old woman, ancient, ancient woman, not like human women are old, but old the way the earth is old or the way stars are old. And her eyes were blazing with light, and she was missing her teeth, and she was a very strange kind of apparition. But at this moment she laughed, and Naropa felt momentarily relieved. And then she said, "And do you understand what these words are pointing to in your own experience?" And Naropa, being a scholar, was not going to say he didn't understand. Part of the whole persona of a scholar, and those of you who have studied in college and high school will know that scholars always have an answer for everything. That's part of their profession, and they do it with each other too. It's very hard to find scholars who will admit to you that they don't know. They can always come up with something. It's just part of their training. It's part of the pecking order in the scholarly world that the people who are most convincing in terms of always having an answer, even if it's totally insane, are the ones that rise to the top. So Naropa, being part of this world, said, "Yes, I understand the inner sense. I understand the meaning." And at this, the woman became beside herself with anguish and grief and was crying and wailing. And when empty, endless space cries and wails, it is truly a terrifying experience. Naropa was frozen, and then Naropa melted, and he realized that he could not play this game with this woman. Naropa asked her what he should do. In other words, at that moment, Naropa actually gave something back to this experience that he had. In many cases with us, strangely enough, we have similar kinds of experience, but we don't do anything with them. And in a worst-case scenario, we run to a psychiatrist and get some psychiatric medication so that it doesn't happen again. In our culture, to have an experience of the nature that Naropa had is regarded as being insane. You're insane. You're a weirdo. You are trapped in some kind of whirlpool of insanity, and we better get you treatment, or you haven't got a hope. We need to bring you back and conventionalize you. In terms of my profession, I'm a teacher, and I teach in the college level, and observing high school, the high schools, at least, you know, where I live, it's so interesting that much of what goes under the guise of education at that level, at the high school level, and also at the college level, is trying to convince people of a certain model of reality. And unfortunately, it's one where 99% of what they actually are gets left out. Well, in Naropa's case, he was able to respond to the demise of his world. And he asked this woman, and she's called a Dakini, D-A-K-I-N-I, Dakini in Sanskrit, "What should I do?" And she said, "You have some serious things to learn. You have to start your learning all over again. You don't know anything, actually, about reality." And Naropa said, "How can I do that?" And she said, "You need to go there." And she pointed to the east, and she said, "You need to find my brother. My brother is a Siddha. You need to find him." She didn't tell Naropa her brother's name. She didn't tell him where he was living, and she didn't tell Naropa how he was going to find him. This kind of approach is very much the style of the Buddhist Tantra in terms of initially people realize that their lives are not working. And then secondly, they realize they need to find someone to show them the way out of the burning house that they're in. It's as if we're all living in a house that's on fire. And most of us are in the inner rooms and we smell the smoke, but we just convince ourselves that everything is okay. And sometimes a wall falls down or a flame bursts through the door, and we have to make a fast adjustment. We realize how bad things are. But most of the time, especially in our culture, that doesn't happen. Most of the time, we stay in that inner room. Well, in the Siddha's case, they realize the house is on fire, but they don't know how to get out. They realize that if they stay in that house, it's only a matter of time until they're going to be burned alive, and nothing will come of their human life. The Siddhas are looking and realizing and searching for a way out, and their approach is to find a teacher. This brings us to another aspect of the Siddhas' lives, which is the search for the teacher. When you are dealing with a organized, institutionalized, conventional religion, it's pretty easy to find a reference point, whether in the priest or the rabbi or the Buddhist scholar or whatever. The culture has a list of credentials, training, and accomplishments that that person needs to have, and if you want a teacher within that kind of tradition, then fine, you can go and you can find that person, and you can become like that person if you work hard enough. But in the Tantra, because the Tantra is dealing with the realm of reality that's outside ordinary society, you don't know where you're going to find your teacher, and you don't know what your teacher is going to look like, or how your teacher is going to present him or herself. So the search for the teacher, for all of these siddhas, all of these saints, was a major traumatic part of their journey. The interesting thing about looking for a teacher is that you won't find a teacher until there's enough desperation in yourself that you've given up all hope for other alternatives to your fundamental life problem. As long as we hold out this hope and that hope and this strategy and that strategy, as long as we convince ourselves that there's some other way to do it, we will never find a teacher. In terms of the life of the siddhas, many times the search has to go on and on. It's a long-term search. And we have to go through a lot of failures and a lot of missteps. The most important theme for the siddhas is some kind of, number one, hopelessness in terms of other solutions. They know that they must find an authentic tantric teacher to teach them the methods of this tradition. And also a kind of willingness to stay with the journey and stay with the question and not turn on the TV or pick up the newspaper or go on a vacation, in the sense of trying to tune out their fundamental existential situation. In Naropa's case, he wandered through the jungle for months, and he looked everywhere, and he would ask people, "Have you seen the Dakini's brother?" He met many people, and none of them were quite the person he was looking for. Eventually, he came to a monastery deep in the jungle, some little hermitage somewhere. And they're about to have lunch, and they said, "You are obviously a wandering practitioner. Would you care to have lunch with us?" And he said, "Yes, I would love to have lunch." He was invited in, and they shut the door from the inside, as was customary at that time. When lunch was served, if you were in, that's fine. If you're out, tough, if you were part of that community, and you had to be there on time. So they locked the doors from the inside, and they started serving lunch. And all of a sudden, out of thin air, this filthy, disgusting, smelly beggar with long hair and obviously lice all over him appeared out of nowhere and started frying live fish over the monastery fire. And of course, within the Buddhist context, that's a terrible thing, because first of all, you're not supposed to kill living beings. But perhaps equally important, if anybody found out that kind of thing was going on in the monastery, they wouldn't support the monastery anymore, and the monastery would be finished. So the monks were horrified, and they beat this beggar, and they opened the door, and they threw him out into the courtyard. And somehow Naropa realized this was the person he was looking for, and who knows how he knew it. Maybe something just became clear in his mind. Maybe he got a feeling that was similar to the feeling he got with this old woman that initially appeared to him. And sure enough, it was his teacher, Tilopa, and Naropa began to study with him and receive teachings from him. This illustrates a very important theme for the Buddhist Tantra in general, for the kind of spirituality that it represents, which is that it is often in the most despised and socially unacceptable aspects of our lives and our experience that the true teacher is found. Often the door that is the most unlikely is exactly the door that we need to find and open and step through. Often spirituality is thought of as a process of going higher and higher and becoming more and more pure and more good and achieving some kind of super ultimate above Mount Everest type of saintliness. On the other hand, the Buddhist Tantra takes a very different approach. The process of spirituality is going down into our being, down into the depths of our pain, our suffering, and our confusion. And you can think of it as an inverted pyramid, that we are making a journey down inside a pyramid of our being. And the lower we go, the closer we get to what we need to find. And when we are at the very bottom, and we are completely, because we are so aware of ourselves and our karma and who we are completely trapped by our situation and our whole state of being, that's exactly where the door is. And for each one of us, the bottom of that pyramid, the lowest of the low, the most despised, is going to be different. But each of us has that within our state of being. And that is the doorway for Tantra. That is the entry point. That is what we have to find. The reason meditation is so important is because it allows us to make that journey downward. In meditation, we sit and we look and we watch and we open ourselves and we experience what happens in our state of being when we're not preoccupied and distracted with a million things. And gradually, we find ourselves going down step by step into that pyramid of our being, down further, and sometimes it becomes very dark, and then we find the door. So that was Naropa's gift to us, that he found the door in the most unlikely beggar, the person who was thrown out of some rundown little rat-infested monastery somewhere in the jungle of North India. He was even thrown out of there as being this despicable, despised person, and Naropa realized, that's the one I'm looking for. So the Siddhas searched for their gurus, they made their journey, and they found their teacher, and then they began to work with that teacher in a very close and intimate way. Later in this program, we're going to talk about the nature of the tantric relationship between teacher and student. But I want to say one thing at this point. Often we think of the tantric teacher as being a person on some kind of elevated high throne, dispensing teachings from above. But in the Indian tradition, in the tradition of the Siddhas, these people who lived between the 8th and 12th century, the tantric teacher was a person of realization. And you can say realization of what? Realization of the nature of reality when you strip away all of your preconceptions and all of your ideas about what it should be or could be, and all of your hopes and fears. Your hopes about how wonderful everything could be and your fears about what a nightmare reality could be. And when you have, through your practice, you have unburdened yourself of all of those coverings and all of those defenses, then reality shows itself in a certain kind of way that is incredibly intense and brilliant. And the tantric teacher is a person who embodies that. And all the tantric teacher wants to do is share that with somebody else, with a disciple or a few disciples. Their question is there anyone that I can share this experience of reality with? And the tantric journey is that the teacher leads others into that naked, liberated, boundless experience of life. So the journey, of course, with a teacher is that you study with a tantric teacher and you engage in a lot of practice, and much of this program is going to be talking about what that is. But ultimately, all of it is that the teacher is leading you into the limitless experience of reality that is his or her own world. All of those practices are ways of simply leading us to a point of intimacy with our teacher so that the teacher's experience can be accepted, received, experienced by us. And that experience of reality is liberation. Liberation is not escaping from the world. It's not entering some other kind of reality. Liberation is finding the root and the essence of this world that we live in. Most people spend most of their lives avoiding this world that we live in. The tantric experience is giving up the avoidance, giving up the denial, and giving up the blindness so that we see things exactly as they are. And this is what the teacher brings to us. From this point, as we'll see later in this program, there's a lot of study, there's a lot of practice, there's a lot of interaction between student and teacher, and the teacher puts you in all kinds of interesting and challenging situations, and in some sense brings you face to face with that old woman that Naropa met, that old woman who stepped out of the other world and showed Naropa a much bigger and more genuine existence. The siddhas eventually achieve realization after a lot of practice and a lot of work on themselves, and then they themselves become tantric teachers, and it is through their sacrifice of their own life, really, that has enabled this tradition to still be alive. One of the things that Trungpa Rinpoche, my own teacher, said many times was, when you practice Vajrayana or Tantra, Vajrayana is another word for Tantra in Tibet, when you practice this tradition, never forget that this tradition is alive only because countless generations of people, beginning with these siddhas and countless people after them, have been willing to sacrifice their hopes and their dreams for a genuine experience of what the world is. And because of their sacrifice, this tradition has now come down and is available in this culture for those who want it.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.